The World of Dick and Jane. Dick, Jane, and Sally who? They have no last name, but it doesn't matter. Family matters. A fun-loving, secure family where everyone plays and nobody yells. A happy family where the kids are free to be kids and are so good that mother and father never say no. A traditional family with a pretty mother, a handsome father, two kind and generous grandparents, three well-adjusted kids, not too many, not too few, and a menagerie of equally well-adjusted pets. A family where everyone is trusting and shares a sense of humor, the kind of family every child and every parent wants.
Welcome to EXO episode 24, Carry On. This episode is about a friend of mine, a guy named Ken, but to explain first how I met this guy. When I first started doing podcasts, I did a lot of derivative kind of stuff, you know, kind of trying to do what I'd heard other people do. It never worked out as well as what they were doing, obviously. When I finally hit on my own thing, it was basically the idea was just to walk around outside, just to walk around in whatever city I was in, and just talk about what was on my mind or what I was up to, and then I would play songs to sort of stitch it all together. And I thought it was really kind of a cool thing because the sound quality obviously hurt a little bit. It's not as good as people in their home studios and stuff, but I thought it made up for it because I was out in the world, you know, I was in weird locations. I thought that made it kind of interesting. And I also like the idea of just talking to yourself, because I feel like that's when you get the most sincere thoughts out of a person, because there's nobody there making them feel weird. They're not being observed. It's just them talking to some phantom future audience. So then when I moved to Toronto, I got an email from this guy named Ken, who goes by the name The Scarborough Dude online. And it turns out that Ken's idea for a show was to record when he's out in the world. Could be sitting in his car outside a bar, could be at a park near his house, could be at an airport in Japan. But record out in the world and talk about whatever was on his mind, and then put in songs in between. That motherfucker came up with the exact same idea I did, except he did it 3 years before me, and he's 31 years older than I am. It's fucking amazing that a guy his age is even into podcasting at all, and came up with my revolutionary idea way before I did. It's like, shit, man, come on, fuck. So Ken runs a podcaster night here in Toronto where a bunch of podcasters all get together and hang out once a month. And it's really cool. I get to meet a bunch of new people and got to know him a bit and listen to his show. Ken's podcast is called Dicks and Janes, which is the name of an old zine he used to edit. A lot of times it's just, you know, kind of day-to-day stuff. It's not, you know, it's just the millstone of life. But every once in a while, you hit these veins, you hit these runs where Ken would start talking about his past especially. Those were my favorite parts because he's about the same age as my parents. So to get this view of the world that he's from was really interesting to me. So that's what this episode is about. It started with just a clip he put in about a lady from his job that just annoys him. And it really cracked me up because it is, it's kind of unfair, it's sort of petty, he's just like, man, this lady drives me bananas. But it's so relatable, you know, I know exactly what he's talking about, I've been there. And then from there, it just slid into these really great stories about, you'll hear it, it's fantastic, just all kinds of good stuff. EXO number 24, Carry On.
Yeah. Dixon Janes. Do you remember, does Dixon Janes mean anything? Dick and Jane?
Yes, of course.
Who are Dick and Jane? Tell our listeners, who are they?
Well, Dick and Jane are early reading.
Exactly. Yes. And this is why I grew up reading Dick and Jane. Many of us grew up, I'm born 1948. Dixon Janes, I've used as kind of a generic title to mean any man, any woman. People who grew up kind of naively in the 50s and had a good life. And then suddenly the 60s hit us very hard, and our lives went topsy-turvy, and we discovered, we came under the influence of people like Timothy Leary and Allen Ginsberg.
Yes, it changed
our lives forever. There was no going back.
Welcome to Dixon Janes podcast number 270, 270 that would be. 271 hour shows I've given you. That's a lot. And it's been fun. I've really given myself an hour's time, just the free time that goes with podcasting and how relaxing and how satisfying that can be. Not for the end product, but just for the doing of it. Still at Buffer's Park. I forgot the reason I had started recording, and I my day started off. I came into my office. It's fine. Now there's a lady who works next door for a printing company, design company, who for some reason I just don't like. I know why I don't like. She's a certain type of woman, the kind of woman I hated, girl I hated in high school. Woman who just, you'll never have any in-depth conversation with. And she just represents a certain type I just fucking can't stand. I want to just puke when they're in him. I want to be so rude. So usually I keep my office door closed because I don't even want encounters with her. Like, today she came in and she sort of stops at my door with that big smile, you know. Well, my son finally decided. I'm thinking, oh, fuck, here we go. I don't know you. I don't know your son. She's bursting to tell somebody. He saved all his money. He's taken it all. He's going to take the plunge. Yeah, okay, you got me hooked. Yeah, I'm supposed to show. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even looking up from my tweets. I'm just trying to ignore her. I'm just, Yeah, he's going to buy a MacBook. He's going to buy a portable computer, a Mac. Okay, yeah, so I'm supposed to be impressed. That's, he's earned it. He's worked for all that money. And from his summer jobs and his Christmas money, he saved it all and he's decided he's going to buy his computer. His first one. I don't give a fuck about you, and your son. I just don't fucking care. It's like these people who write these goddamn Christmas letters that they send out and every fucking kid in the family is doing fantastic and everybody is, and they send this out. It's like a slap in the face to everybody they know. Look what we're doing. Look how good we are, Fuck you, I mean, God, I hate that. That's what one of the reasons I started Dixon Janes Zine was to be real, to say what people are really like. You're up, you're down, you're this shit about this. Why is she trying to impress me? And so I muttered something, you're not worried about him spending too much time on it, Oh, no, he's so good. He's really good that way. No, he's never a problem. No, he's an A student, and he's good at all sports. Fuck you. God damn it. Why does she have to share that? Why does she have to tell me that, here I am. I'm really proud of my kids. Now, number one son just flunked out of university, and he's trying to get back in after a disastrous year. Smokes weed, you know. Well, actually, he's given it up. Good for him. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of them because they're real and for who they are, not because they're going to impress somebody else. They're mine. They're my kids. I love them, and I love them the way they are for who they are. Number two son did his best ever on this summer course he's taking. He's taking summer school because he flunked courses here and there. Well, good for him. He did it on his own. He registered. He's come. You know, he hasn't missed a day. He's doing really well. He'll probably get an A on the course. Great. His best mark ever. And as I'm driving in, he says, oh, darn, just forgot something. I said, oh, what? What did you forget? My cards. I play cards every day with the guys. And that's not the kind of thing a mother would brag about or a father would brag about. But I'm thinking, oh, good for you. You didn't know anybody at this school. But you're having fun in your free time. You've made friends. You went to a movie with him yesterday. I'm just proud of him. But not for these fucking goddamn superficial reasons that other people are. Like, look how good my son. My son saved all his money and he's getting a computer on his own. Fuck you. Fuck you. I hope he drops it and it breaks. I really do. It just bugs me. If you're that kind of person, fuck off. Don't sit beside me. Don't tell me about your children. All right? Cockroach in my car? Get the fuck out, buddy. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. All right, anyway, I gotta go. Bye.
First set of batteries, and here we go.
Yeah. I'm Monday morning, November 1st, in Buffers Park, of course, because today's my day with no classes, but I'm on my way into the office to mark some papers. I think I'll have a productive day, but time out first, come to the park. It's cold. Today's the first day I woke up with the windshield of my car completely iced over, like completely. And God, I started driving my son to school and I couldn't see. That's a sign of winter. And of course, his words were, God, I hate winter. I've hated it since I was 10 years old. And, but I said, yeah, but when you're old like me, you see beauty in everything. You see beauty in all the seasons. And And maybe that's what draws me to the park. Maybe it's just a sign of age, and it's not one I regret at all. Because I bet you I have a lot of younger listeners who would, quite frankly, be bored coming to a park, sitting on a bench, and just kind of toasting in the sunshine. The sun is reflecting off the lake. I'm blinded. I look up, and that brilliance across the water, you know, the dazzle. And I can't see at all. My glasses, I'm sure, have turned to black by now. It's a beautiful feeling. I've got my down vest on and a lovely, lovely scarf that Catherine Matthews kindly knit for my 60th birthday present. Got my thermos of coffee. And I thought we'd just talk a little bit. Maybe I'll wind down this podcast now. I always want that feeling, you know, that I've given you something that you that has been of value, and not just, oh, there's this guy droning on in the background. But I know, for some people, it's different things that I talk about. There's so many chapters in the past I'd like to go back to. I think of that time in Europe, 1969, because, I mean, God damn it now, that's history. 69, 70, wandering Europe with a backpack. Like, what was the world like back then? And then I'm thinking, gee, I never, hardly ever talk about my high school time. What was it like being high school grade from 61 to 66? And so much more. And then, of course, my relations with my own parents, my father. I was very close to my mother. I was very fortunate that we had a good relationship with her. I always called her by her first name, Joan, because it was just, to me, that's just who she was. I saw her as the person, not just my mother. She was a lovely, kind woman, and I don't think she had ambition, but her maybe dreams? I don't know. I guess not. I think she had what she wanted. She had a wonderful man, my father. She married and remained married to their entire lives. They were very, very close. Man, do I want to talk about that?
It's unfortunate that when we feel a star.
Here I am, reflections of my own marriage of 24 years and my own two children and the life I've started leaving. I'm just glad that my own parents were able to meet my wife and begin to at least get to know my children. But I'm sad for my children. Of course, I married so late that they don't have grandparents here that they can visit and spend some time with.
Love is like a sin, my love, for the ones that feel it the most. Look at her. Like a flame, she will love you like a fly. I'll never love you again.
Here's one thought, and that is, if you just tell a story and there's no emotion attached, and you're not emotionally into that story while you're telling it, there's really no point. I was remembering my grandmother because I was reflecting on the generations and how kind and kind of gentle and just a good person my own mother was. And then I think back to her mother, who's a very strong character. A real product of the Victorian era. And yes, my roots go back that far. Gotta remember, my mother was born in 1918, I think, or 1916. So, you know, that goes back pretty far. But I loved her granny. She was my mother's mother. And my grandfather unfortunately died when I was just, before I hit my teens, I guess. I liked him a lot. Certainly remember him very clearly. She will love you like a fly and never love you again. But eventually I think got gangrene from a wound from World War I and had his leg amputated in the St. Anne's Vets Hospital and kind of went downhill from there. But I see it's almost like this skip a generation, because I see so many parallels between my marriage to my wife, who is also strong and independent and a product of a certain era in Japan, and my grandparents, my mother's parents. And I really see that, and it's interesting because it makes me so curious to know what's going to happen to my children and who will become their partners, if any, and if they were to ever have children, what would it be like and what would they remember? And it just fascinates me. The one memory I do have that ties all this together, and it was really overpowering, was when my wife and I left Yokohama. We had eloped, we'd come back. That was 86, 87, I guess, yeah. We left Japan via Siberia. It was the most wonderful tour. We traveled around the world, like circled the globe to get home to Canada. And it was a tremendous thing. You could go through the Russian Tourist Bureau and buy this package that got you as far as Moscow from Japan. And then from there you had to have a ticket out. So we went as far as Prague, the Czech Republic. It was the most amazing trip. God damn, I should relive that too. You know, holy fuck, eh? These memories like that, I never include that one. But I'm talking about, oh yeah, my trip to Europe. Yeah, I went to Africa. Yeah, I went to Japan. I forget that. God damn it. Took the Trans-Siberian Railway across. And it was an amazing trip with my new wife. And the moment of just horror. When I didn't see her get back on the train, we were stopped somewhere in Siberia, some town. We got off, we got separated, and I didn't see her get back on, and I got on the train in a panic. Lock out before you make it worse on yourself. through the coach. It's like I just had visions that she didn't have the passport. I was holding that she was being held, and the train was going to pull out, and there's not another train coming. You know, you don't hail a taxi and catch up to it. And I had visions, and I had to make that decision. Do I jump off the train as it's moving to go and get her, or to just hope, like, pray, like, hell, I find her? Sure enough, finally met up with somebody I knew, another tourist. There weren't many of us, and they had seen her get on another coach. And it was one of those, like, real panic. Like, do you pull a trigger or not? A life and death decision. Do I jump off this train and run in and find her, or jump off and realize I've made the biggest goddamn stupid mistake in my life? I've jumped off a moving train and left my wife on it, heading off to Moscow alone. Oh, God, I shit myself at that time, really. Panic, panic, panic. What do I do? It was the most amazing trip, but we left Yokohama by boat, by this Russian ship that was decommissioned the year after. Beautiful ship, made out of, you know, all the interiors, wood and brass, very, very small. There was only, I guess, 8 of us as tourists on this little Russian freighter. Can't remember the name of it. Heading up to Vladivostok. So it was a 2-day journey, a 2-night journey. God damn, what a trip. Just as we were pulling out of Yokohama, I didn't even know they have this tradition where they tie streamers to the boat and to the shore, and as the boat leaves or the streamers break, it's a traditional farewell. And I was up on the upper deck, up as high as I could be, a very small ship, looking down at my wife on the bow, this small figure, and we were leaving. She was leaving her home country, and I don't know what feelings were running through her at that time, heading off to Canada on this ship with this crazy guy, this tall, crazy Canadian guy she had married, eloped with. And I looked down, and I just had this flash of it being my grandmother, my grandmother, she left England to come to Canada in 1910. With Percy to head off to Vancouver Island so he could have this plot of land and grow fruit or whatever. It's very strong vision of that connection in time, of this, as she stood there. Almost like the spirit or the connection, the memory, something alive came to me so strong. It wasn't something I thought about, it just came to me. My grandmother leaving England. And there was my wife leaving Yokohama. There you go. God damn, eh? I think I'm going to preempt, is that it? All the other stuff that I've put on this podcast and give you this for what it's worth, because I'm kind of in a happy place right now. With my morning coffee and the sunshine and the sparkles on the water. Go back to my 27-year-old self. When I was 27, and that, I've always claimed, has been the best summer in my life. Who was I at 27? Who did? I had my circle of friends. I was out in Vancouver. I was just heading off, just broken up with my girlfriend. Was heading off to Prince George to get that job on the railway because I had to have the experience of working on a track gang so that I could earn the, you know, kind of experiences you need to be a real writer, a la Jack Kerouac. And so did that, and then went on from there to spend that fabulous summer drunk up in the Yukon. So best summer of my life. That summer in Prince George, 1975. Having a goal. What was your goal? To get a job on a railway gang and just being persistent and going up there and staying at a men's hostel and for free, you know, and eating the meals that they serve the Salvation Army bums, you know. Basically, that's what it was. And going out every day and going into the office for the BC Rail and, no, not today. And finally, at the end of a week, all right, just go down to the track. You know, probably somebody quit or didn't show up and told me where to go, and there was the gang, you know, Gang 301, and signed up and got hired on and given a hammer and said, bang these spikes. Didn't know what the fuck, could barely lift the fucking hammer. Was given royal shit for being such a puny weakling. How the fuck was I ever going to survive a summer? And put some muscle into it, boy, and lasting and meeting up with the guys from Cornell. The boys who'd come down and do this every summer and just get fucking hammered and doped up and blow all their money when they rolled into Vancouver to celebrate. And then having, you know, ending up back in Quesnel, flat broke. I wonder what happened to that gang, Rory and the whole gang. Anyway, getting some advice from one of the other guys who've been around today. Hey, don't worry, buddy. Just the last 2 weeks. If you can last 2 weeks, you can last the whole summer. And sure enough, that's what I did. And managed living in a bunk car, you know, a dirty old blue bunk car with a real wood stove inside the bunk car. And getting out on the track 6 days a week, 10, 12 hours a day or more, and being fed all you could possibly eat just for the sake of saying, hey, I'm a fucking Jack Kerouac. That's who I am. I'm a railway bum. I'm going to tell stories and I'm gonna do it. I'm going to live the life. And I'm proud of myself for that. I'm proud that in my 27th year, that's what I got up to, that I just said, yep. Had a plan and followed it through and made it happen and had just a great summer. And saved a pile of money and then went up to the Yukon and got drunk for 2 months. Holy fuck, man, yeah. Met up with my buddies from Vancouver as planned and spent that summer drunk around the clock. Like, what a fucking wonderful thing to do with a life. How many people have done that? Spend a summer drunk every day. Happily drunk. Merrily drunk. Traveling, too. Up to Dawson City. Traveled to Alaska. Hiked the fucking Chilkoot Trail. A 4-day hike. hauling heavy backpacks over the top, deep in snow. Dude, tell them about the first time you did fucking LSD in fucking Tangier, Morocco. Now that's a fucking story. How many people are wearing that fucking badge? Fucking LSD with the heavy duty, cool drug smugglers in Tangier. Dude, try it. It's cool, man. So you show me around your town. Going out there and having the most amazing fucking trip on blotter acid for the first time ever, including being on a beach and having Moroccan police wearing these hooded jalabas coming up with a gun right to your gut, pointed at you, like saying, hey, who are you and what are you doing here in French, and me being as cool as could be. And you got me around. Don't worry, I speak French, sure. We're just tourists, man. We're just living down the road there. No, we don't got no passports. And meanwhile, everybody's carrying their hashish and their boots and their hash pipes. And we're on. My friend is freaking out. They're not police. I've seen these guys before. You know, demand to see their papers. Hey, be good, man. They got a gun pointed at us like, hey... It's our blood and sweat, and life is what you manage in between. Yeah, man, fucking Tangier, Morocco, doing ass. That's who I was, man. Fuck, when I was, what, 20? That'd be 1969, 1970. A young man backpacking through Europe had to get down to Morocco, man, because that's a trip. So I guess maybe what I'm saying, what I'm wanting to say is, I'm not just this old fucking man at 62 talking boring stories about his teaching in his class. I've had a whole fucking life to live, man. I've lived it rich. I've paid the price. Maybe I'm gonna pay the price, and I wouldn't trade any of it, so fuck you. Fuck you, meaning not you, the listener, but you, the guy who's always on my back saying, hey... All your friends have got pensions. They're happily retired. Their futures are set. They'll live till they're 90. They're okay. Their houses are paid for. Yeah, well, fuck. They didn't do what I did. And if I had to do it all over again, God, I hope I'd have the balls to live the life I led. Because it took fucking balls. All right, I know it sounds like I'm bragging. I know it sounds shitty to say that. Hey, look at me. But maybe I'm feeling just a little bit. I don't know. Feeling what? Feeling, what do I have to prove? Why do I have to prove it? Yeah, that's it. I have to prove something to maybe some of you younger listeners out there that, hey, fuck, man. You won't crack at it. Don't fucking live a life of regrets. Don't fucking just follow that straight and narrow and keep your security in your comfort zone. Because, yeah, what I did was make myself fucking uncomfortable. Going off to Nigeria, living in a fucking bush village, man, that scared the shit out of me. That was fucking uncomfortable. Getting as sick as a fucking dog.
getting malaria, having the most painful fucking needle I've ever had in my life shoved deep into my buttocks, you know, with a guy laughing as I cried, you know, for the pain. Crawling on the floor with this fucking fever. Jesus Christ, you know, shitting yourself silly from just eating the wrong thing and making a mental note, okay, don't drink palm wine from that guy. Off to fucking Japan on a one-way fucking ticket, man. I'm a fucking hero. That's what I'm saying. I'm a fucking hero, and I don't mind fucking saying it. And fuck you if you don't like it. I'm a fucking hero. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm sorry. I know that's very offensive. You're not allowed to say things like that about yourself. But fuck you. So I won't get my Medal of Honor. I'm giving it to myself. You're a fucking hero, man. You spent all those years, you spent years drunk out in Vancouver, drunk and stoned and wasted. The 70s, that wasted time, but fuck, hey man, it was fucking Vancouver in the 70s. Explored the gay scene. No, I wasn't gay, but my best friend at the time was, and going out to those clubs with him, that was cool, that was neat, that was a scene, man.
This is a day without a trace of reason. No matter where you turn, and the walls will fall, affirming nothing. So what's it all about?
It was fun. So shake up your life a little bit. God, I hope I'm recording. Shake up your life a little bit. Don't be too fucking comfortable. But I hope if it's too late and you're already locked in to your comfort zone and can't get out, that you did something before that that was not comfortable. Because that's what I'm saying, man.
And the walls will fall, affirming nothing. So what's it all about?
Because I felt I was a little wimp. I had to do this stuff. I was pushed to do this stuff. I'll show you. Yeah, I can do that.
Wounds always speak to love.
Okay, man, now let's refine that a little bit. Let's not just shout at your listeners. Let's try and refine it just a bit and actually give a story. How about that story in Mexico, when you went to fucking Mexico and you picked, you hand-picked the fucking psilocybin mushrooms in the cow shit at dawn. You went out there because Alvin knew which ones to get. It was the ones with the purple ring around them. Pick those, man, you'll be okay. And then fucking stuffing those things down your mouth with bread and marmalade and washing it back with Pepsi-Cola. And then fucking, holy holy shit, we overdid it. We had too fucking many, and we stayed in Palenque in this most beautiful fucking Mayan jungle ruins, sitting on the corner of temples, found my spot on this planet this time now. I'm sitting here on the edge of this fucking Mayan temple, as high as I'm ever gonna fucking be in my whole goddamn life. Holy fuck, man. Wow. Tripping and tripping and tripping and tripping and tripping. Hallucinating at every fucking thing you looked at. And going through this scene when this woman came up to share this pineapple she had in the forest. And I'm thinking, fuck, man. I lost my knife. I can't go. And now I think about that. It was like it was emasculated. Like, hey, why is she asking me, this beautiful woman, to go off into the forest with her and share some fruit? And I'm thinking now, no, man, they might have been killers because she had a boyfriend with her who came after her, and I might have had my guts ripped out. Ooh, maybe it was good I didn't, and all those other things that tried to drive me from that corner, and I just said, no, man, this is where I'm meant to be, here, now. Now I feel good having those memories and looking back at the richness, the fabric of my life. I feel fucking good now. Proud of what I've done. Fuck you and your fucking pensions and everything else. God damn it. Told you the story, off to Japan, eloping, running away with a wife. What a fucking adventure, goddammit. Yes, I'm a fucking hero. I'm sorry that I have to scream it at you, but I gotta tell myself that. I need this little bit of reassurance today about what my life has been all about. God damn it, as I think back to all of those stories, I feel so fucking proud and so fucking good about what I did. God damn it. And I guess I better end there as I'm standing, glaring, staring into the sun, shining on the sea, and it's sparkling, and it's God screaming back to me. That's what's happening, folks, as the sun dazzles on the waves, and it's absolutely beautiful and brilliant and light, and I'm alive standing on this fucking corner, on this pier, on this point in this park. It's just fucking all so wonderful, and I'm alive like I was alive when I was in my 20s. This is great. This is just fucking great.
everybody wants you to fit in, and there's ways of doing things, and it's logical. And some of us just aren't built that way. And I think a lot of you listeners will understand that maybe you operate on these strange principles too. And so, if anything, I'd like this to be a message of encouragement. Don't give up. If this is who you are and how you work, don't be forced to conform. Don't give up. Don't lose faith in yourself. Don't sell out. Don't try to fit in that box if it doesn't feel right. Carry on and believe in yourself. If you lose that belief in yourself, you've lost everything. You've really got to have it. And damn it, it gets really hard at times because it's as if the world around you, including sometimes friends, family, co-workers, conspire to put you in a spot that you don't necessarily want to be in. And it's very, very, very hard to go your own way and to be a loner and to stick to your guns and just to have the faith that what you're doing is right. I mean, that's just true. It's hard. And I just encourage each and any one of you to look for where that faith comes from, to dig deep inside yourself, to do what it takes to not sell your soul, to not give up, to just keep believing in yourself. It's hard.
And there you go. Wish I could say I love you all, but that would be kind of bullshit because I don't even know who you are, but I'd like it to be true. Bye for now.
XO episode 24. Carry on.
We're bound to wait all night. She's bound to run a mile. Invested in nothing at anyhow. To reach his arm. The garden is sorting out. She curls her lips on a bow. I don't know if I'm dead or not.
You can find Scarborough Dudes podcast at dicksandjanes.blogspot.com. I'd like to give special thanks to Eric from the show Tip Tap Tip in Calgary. He's the one who first recognized that my podcast and Ken's podcast are so similar and recommended to Ken that he get in touch with me. So thanks, Eric, for hooking us up, you know, uniting us. To go check out Eric's show, go to tiptaptip.com. A lot of the music from this episode is from a band called Broken Bells that was recommended to me by my friend Devin, and she recommends all kinds of great stuff to me. So I'd like to give her an EXO shout out as well. For more episodes of EXO, please visit keithcourage.com.
The dawns he went all night. That's all he hoped it was. Break from the warfare in your house. To each his own. The soldier is bailing out. He curled his lips on the bow. And I don't know if the dead can't talk.
Yeah, good morning once again. Gee, this is probably only, let's see, if that was done at 1 o'clock, and it's now, what, 11 o'clock, only that would be 10 hours ago that I spoke to you last in my office, sobering up for the drive home, and I have my route planned. Okay, which is the route to go where I'm not likely, perhaps, to see any police or anything, you know, which would be a safe, easy, direct route to get home, just in case. And at the very last minute, as soon as I came to the first turn, I took a different route. I said, no, I'm going to go along Kingston Road. And I had this strange premonition that that's where the police would be, you know, man, along Kingston Road at 1 o'clock. Of course that's where going to, because that's sort of the strip from all the bars and everybody heading back to Scarborough and Pickering or wherever you're going. You know, and so I knew in my mind this wasn't the route to go. And sure enough, a few blocks down the way, just past Vic Park, where I had been drinking earlier, there's a police roadblock. You know, a ride check to check your alcohol level. And I saw it, and of course I didn't panic. I had waited long enough, you know. I probably hadn't had a drink since 10 or so, and this was 1, so I was okay. And even then, only 3 pints. But I had a toke, too, which gives you a little bit of an edge. So spit my gum out, because that's always a bad sign, you know. You're chewing gum, it looks like you're trying to hide something. Rolled down the window, and then stopped exactly where he had his hand out. So I was showing I was in total control of my car. And, hey, did sir, had anything to drink tonight? And right away I answered, yeah, I had a beer or a supper, but that was about 4 hours ago. All right, thank you, bye-bye. And that was it. Now, the only mistake I made was I felt I had to say something. I wanted to kind of thank them for doing spot checks. You know, this is, you just, hey, don't complicate things. Count your blessings and get the hell out of there. But I had my window down, and just as I pulled away, I called back, carry on. And I don't know why I said that. It was a pretty stupid thing to say. The police, you know, it was my shorthand way of saying you're doing a great job, keep it up, carry on, as if I was the inspector general telling my coppers what to do. Anyway, I was relieved to get home, and then sure enough, I got